Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
Hi everybody.
Hello, everyone.
My name is David Bell.
I'm Tom Ryman.
And we just watched Colossal.
Colossal.
It's a movie.
You don't remember anything last night, huh?
I got really melodramatic, didn't I?
You told me that you weren't really on a vacation. That you've been looking for a job for a year and your boyfriend didn't work out.
You are out of control.
What?
I've packed your things. They're in the bedroom.
What?
And since you didn't have any money, you decided to move back here.
Is there anything else?
Don't you remember anything?
It's also most of an X-Man?
Is it?
Oh, Colossus.
Colossus. Oh, I see what you mean.
So it's like a lot of an X-Man.
Yeah. Okay. This is a Thursday. This is a We Just Watch Classic where we have a Patreon subscriber give us a movie to watch. In this case, this is Joshua Graves. He gave us like 20 movies to watch, including movies like The Last Boy Scout, which I don't know why I'm telling you that, because now some of you might be disappointed. I personally think we chose the right one of this list.
I do as well.
Because I had seen this movie. Also, thanks to thank you, Joshua Graves. Just throwing out.
Thank you.
Tom, you hadn't seen this movie before.
No.
For a very
specific reason, but we don't have to talk about that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have to talk about it, but it's the. There's, you know, sometimes you get spoiled in movies for weird reasons. These things happen. Or like food. I remember I couldn't eat lo mein for like years after I puked lo mein once as a kid. Doesn't matter.
Sure. There's an unwritten law CD that I can't listen to because I got the worst fever of my life while I was listening to that CD.
Right, yeah.
So like to this day, I feel physically ill when I hear any songs from that CD.
Yeah, these things happen.
Yeah.
So this movie, people might have forgotten this movie. It's from 2016, and it's Anne Hathaway, Jason Sudeikis. It's about a woman who discovers that she is puppeting a giant kaiju-type monster across the globe.
Yeah, like on the exact inverse of where they are. It's in Seoul, Korea.
So just from the top of this, Tom, you might, I don't know if you agree or not, but this, we're going to be spoiling it, so you might want to check it out, because every time I mention this movie recently, it's people being like, I haven't seen that movie and I've never heard of it. And people keep looking it up and going, oh, that looks good.
Yeah, watch it. Watch this movie.
Yeah. Okay. So
pause this. Press pause.
Yeah.
Go watch this movie. Return to your listening device and hit resume.
Okay. And that brings me to my question. Tom, how did you like Colossal?
I really liked it.
I really like this movie. Yeah,
this is a good ass movie. This is one of those movies that I sit down expecting to like, and wind up really liking it, and having the movie still not be what I expected.
Right. Yes. Because this movie has a lot going for it. For starters, the cast.
It's the cast is great.
Tim Blake Nelson in there.
Tim Blake Nelson, Dan Stevens.
Dan Stevens playing a minor role. I forgot he was in this, and when they pulled the shot over to him, I was just like, oh, it's Dan Stevens. And of course, Anne Hathaway, who apparently took this movie because it's not a really well-known filmmaker, and he still hasn't done much. She did it because she was like she felt like she was an artistic standstill. Like she probably just played Catwoman or something, which it was I liked her performance as Catwoman, but
she'd done a couple of those Alice in Wonderlands.
Right. So I think she was just like, give me something that is different. And she read this, and I guess, Jonathan Demme turned her on to this script. something like that, or he inspired her to take the script. Yeah, it's very confusing on the Wikipedia.
Didn't he die?
Oh, like maybe it was his ghost. I don't know.
Maybe it was his ghost. Maybe it was the phantom of Jonathan Demme.
Yeah, maybe I read the name wrong. I don't know.
It does seem like it's very. I mean, it's not like. In a this movie doesn't deserve her way, but it's like watching this movie, you're like, wow, you've got Anne Hathaway for this movie.
Yeah. And then I think Anne Hathaway got them other people. She compared it to like her being John Malkovich, which I love being John Malkovich. I would argue this movie has a better plot than being John Malkovich and better meaning.
This movie is way more watchable than being John Malkovich, for sure.
Yeah.
I really like being John Malkovich. But
yeah, yeah. Jason Sudeikis is terrifying.
This, and it may sound shitty to say, but like that he was my favorite thing about this movie because Anne Hathaway comes in and, you know, she kills it. She's great. And, you know, she's just so watchable. She's so good in everything she does. And she really carries this movie. But Sudeikis gives, like I said, this movie is good in a way that I didn't expect. He gives a really unexpectedly great performance as a truly villainous, monstrous character.
His turn
is so crazy. Like, it's just so abrupt and like there's so many scenes where I was just sitting there like, what the fuck is wrong with him?
Right, but it's done in a way that feels, I want to almost say grounded. It's like the fireworks scene.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Is so over the top, but at the same time, it's him clearly like trying to dominate the room, being a not very dominating guy. Like he's a coward ultimately.
Yes.
The scene where he calls out Tim Blake Nelson for doing coke in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. That is such an uncomfortable fucking scene. And he's so good in it. Everybody's so good at this. I would say Anne Hathaway is also great. She's just not, you know, I wouldn't say it's a harder role. It's just a more, Jason Sudeikis' role stands out more for who he is and who he's playing.
His role is more subtle.
Yeah. Yeah. And they do so many good things. Okay. So Anne Hathaway gets broken up with by Dan Steven breaks up with her because she's
been fucking up for a while. She's been out of work for a year. She got laid off from a digital media company.
Yes.
We meet her coming home from being out partying at like 7 a.m. and right. Dan Stevens is getting ready to leave for work, and she makes up some unbelievable story, and he's like, look, you're out of control. I can't deal with you like this. You have to leave. I've already packed all your things for you.
Right.
He leaves, and all of her friends are hiding in a taxi outside, and they come inside as soon as they see him leave to keep the party going. And it's this really awesome shot of where they're like getting set up, dragging all their booze and shit into the apartment to keep the party going, and she's in the center there, and they're completely oblivious to like her, sort of like her world's just sort of imploded a little bit, where she's like, right. Oh shit, I'm homeless now.
And right away it's not necessarily that she's like borderline alcoholic, but she's more just like highly irresponsible. Like she's just, her life is falling apart.
Right. She's in a she's you know, she got laid off. She's been out of work. She's in a rut.
Yes. And she's a fuck up. She's a big fuck up at the start. And that sets up a great part of this, which is that it's her ability to then later forgive Jason Sudeikis when he is being downright sinister. Because they draw a line, basically, where she's a fuck up, but turns out to be evil.
Yeah.
And the line is, of course, human lives. It's when she's suddenly given this giant monster that she controls and realizing the responsibility of that, and she just goes sober immediately and is just like, I have to be careful about this. So she goes home, and Jason Sudeikis said at first he feels like if you didn't know anything about this movie, it'd feel like the beginning of a romantic comedy.
Right. It feels like Oh gosh, there's a, it's not Hope Floats, or it might be Hope Floats, but there's a movie that has this almost identical plot where, like, oh, Sweet Home Alabama. That's what it is.
That's the one, yeah.
Where she is, Reese Witherspoon.
It's like Josh Lucas or something.
Yeah, she like loses her job and has to move back home. And like this guy that she used to be friends with, they, you know, is just, oh, he's still there. And they rekindle their friendship and they become romantically involved. And that is what this movie seems like at first.
Right. And then they do little things like, again, having seen, watched the trailer and stuff, I knew. But they're very good at setting up, well, like her scratching her head.
Yeah,
I really liked how they did that, because she has a nervous tic where she's scratching her head, and basically what happens is she drunkenly goes through an old playground, and I think it's there she scratches her head the first. I don't know, but then she does
it in the bar the first time.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. Oh, I guess what I like about that, and I'm sort of jumping around, is the fact that you think it's just a way for her to then identify the fact that she's the monster, mm-hmm. but it ends up tying into why she's the monster, which I really liked.
Yeah.
And they give a very simple explanation for why it's happening, because it doesn't really matter.
No.
It just needs, it's like being John Malkovich again. It only needs to matter as much as we'll accept the premise.
Right. It's just kind of non-specific magic.
Yeah. And so when she walks through this one playground is when the monster, at exactly the specific time, the monster appears. And so like the first couple times she doesn't realize it's her. And so it's just this shock of the news. And then when she finally realizes she finally suspects it's her, because she sees the head scratch. And then she does specific hand movements to confirm that it's her.
Yeah, it's not the head scratch, actually. She sees the monster appear to be talking on the phone and then throws it. Yeah.
Yeah. And she goes, what I like is they go through all the whole process of like what anybody would kind of do in this situation. Because mm-hmm. then she finally, sort of, like she has a fuck up time where she shows her friends and she's like a little tipsy and the army attacks her. And
yeah.
she can feel it.
It's
and
a so she, funny scene.
Right. She accidentally swats a helicopter. Then Jason Sudeikis grabs her and she falls. And then she wakes up to learn that people have died because she fell. And
yeah.
then the other revelation is that Jason Sudeikis also is creating a monster. It's only the two of them. But he's creating a robot. So she... This was the part where I was like, this is a perfect solution. She learns how to say a message of like an apology in Korean mm-hmm. and then draws it in the sand for everybody to see. And the idea is like, that's the end of it. And that's when it gets really dark. because basically the reveal that happens is that the roles switch and Jason Sudeikis can't stop going into the sandbox
mm-hmm.
into the playground and tormenting this city as the robot, and the relationship
yeah.
devolves. It's a literal playground bully,
yeah.
Which is nice. It's on the nose, but it works.
Yeah.
And it becomes it becomes basically an allegory for an abusive relationship. I mean, it is an abusive relationship.
It's both. Like,
yeah.
And it's also is, you know, it is, the monster does somewhat represent like an addiction spiral.
Yes, yes.
But
like the way they are able to do this so quickly is basically, instead of holding her emotionally hostage, he's just literally holding her hostage.
Right. He's physically holding her hostage by being like, if you quit the bar or leave town or do anything that I don't want you to do, I'm going to go to the playground and kill people.
Right. And it's fucking chilling, because when you think about it, there's not much she can do. She could, like, at one point he goes to her house and he's sitting there and she's like, I'm going to call the cops. And he's like, go ahead, call the cops. Because he knows that it's like, eventually he's going to get out. And he hasn't done anything too egregious, you know? It's that sort of thing where nothing he's done... Like, you could call the cops on someone getting drunk at a playground in the morning, but they'll probably just go in the drunk tank for the night, and you just can't stop them forever, is the idea. Where it's like, she either has to... Like, the only thing she can do is either do what he says or kill him. because it's, you can't really prove that what's happening is happening. And it's, it just puts her in like a, it's a really awful situation that at some point in the movie, I was like legitimately like, I'm not sure how she's going to get out of this.
Yeah. Like I wasn't, I couldn't figure it out either.
Yeah. And then what she does is great, which is, spoilers.
Yeah.
She flies to Korea and realizes that it's a reverse situation. So if she physically goes to the same location, the monster shows up in Korea, her monster self shows up back in her hometown, and she picks up Jason Sudeikis and throws him.
Just throws him into the horizon.
And I just can't, I just can't help but to imagine some quiet breakfast being had by a family and Jason Sudeikis' corpse just crashing through that window, because he's got to land somewhere. So yeah,
right, he probably exploded. I mean, it's 8:05 in the morning.
Yeah,
so he probably exploded through some family's roof right when they were having breakfast.
Yeah, no, nothing anywhere he hits. If he hits anybody who's awake, they do not need that. Like at 8:05 in the morning, there's no one who deserves that. Crashing through their house, just a ragdoll corpse. But yeah, and then I like the button on the end as she goes to a bar in Seoul, yeah. And the woman's like, "Would you like a drink?" And she's just like, "Ugh," because it sort of ends with like she still has nothing's been solved in her life, except kind of the realization that she's a fuck up, but not a monster. You haven't seen The Girl on the Train, have you?
No. I have not.
Without spoiling The Girl on the Train, there's a very similar dynamic, which is like a fuck up versus people who are actually like, you know, evil, or abusive. And it's a neat way of doing it because it puts them in the situation where they don't, you know, if they don't realize what's happening, they feel like they're the problem. And that's how this sort of starts, is she feels like she doesn't, you know, like the way Dan Stevens is that he's not necessarily a good guy in this.
No, he's not. And he's also controlling, but in a different way.
Right. And like, it's like you get it because like she goes to work at Jason Sudeikis' bar and becomes a waitress. And yeah. Dan Stevens is just like, no, you shouldn't be a waitress. You're very smart, you should be a writer and this and that, but again he does it in a very controlling way and like mocks what she's doing and is generally a big British asshole, and makes her,
yeah.
It's her between basically like these two guys who are making her feel like garbage for different reasons.
Yeah.
And I like that she doesn't just go back to him at the end.
No, she shouldn't.
No.
Like, he was, yeah, man, this fucking movie.
It's a hell of a movie.
Yeah, it's real good.
I'm not even sure, like, going through the meaning of the movie is that, or the moral of the movie, I'm trying to figure it out because it's not really, it's an allegory.
It's both. It's weird. It's allegorical and literal.
Yeah. Hold on. There's meowing at my door because I dared to shut my door. I'm not even going to cut this out. I just have to get up, open my goddamn door, and let this little, my own little fucking monster.
See, Dave, you didn't pay attention to the film. You're also being in a controlling relationship by acquiescing to Kitty's demands.
I'm back. It wasn't even that shut.
Like she could have opened.
Yes, if she just a light shove with her dumb little paws. I'm talking about you. She's not even looking at me. I'm not cutting that out.
No, don't. Keep this all in. This is all important. This is all real. Hot con.
Yeah.
Hot con.
Fuck this movie. More people should see this movie. It came and went. It got great reviews of the people who saw it. It's dark, but it's not like I enjoy it. Like even
well,
when
you don't come away from it like it's dark, but not in like you don't come away from it feeling like bad.
Yeah, and one of the things, yeah, no, because she ends up throwing Jason Sudeikis into the horizon, and it's not preachy, like
no, it's not. It doesn't hit you over the head with like she doesn't sit there and like have a moment where like music plays and she's, you know, realizing that, oh, Dan Stevens isn't good for me either. They just kind of show you it. Like, here's a scene yeah. where he's being shitty and she's like, you know what? I can't. And with Sudeikis, it's like she has one moment where she kind of says it out loud, but it's like at that point, it's become kind of clear what his relationship to her is. But she says, oh, I get it now. It's the schoolyard bully thing.
Yeah.
Where she says, oh, I get it now. You hate yourself. I used to think you were trying to like own me or possess me, but that's not it. You don't like me because right. you perceive that like my life is better than yours and you can't stand that.
Yeah. And that's, oh God, the way they handle his character, because mm-hmm. the first time, all right. So the first time he goes on the playground and he's like drunk and oh my fucking God, there's so much. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she fucking slaps him.
She does. Yeah.
And they do this great thing where everybody's watching because the monsters are showing up at the same time.
Yeah.
Every single day. So they're became like the, when she apologizes and then when Jesus shows up, they like the media is like, well, it turns out the monster was good. The robot isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And there's gotta be, it's very symbolic that he's a robot and she's a monster. That's perfect because he has no feelings, basically, where she's just out of control.
Yeah, exactly.
Man.
She like can't control her own strength and the yeah. robot is just like, yeah, you're right. So, it's just like a shell.
It's a perfect metaphor. Mm-hmm. So she basically is just like, get the fuck off the playground. And everybody sees the monster point at the robot to leave and slap the robot. So yeah, the monster becomes the hero. So then whenever they have these fucking tense arguments on the playground, you can hear like the neighborhood in the
right
the
like cheering
houses
like
cheering
like reacting to a schoolyard fight.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. But then there's also the ratcheting tension of like after that it's like so man, after that first encounter on the playground when she slaps him, there's a moment where you're like, is he gonna hit her?
Right. And then he does the perfect thing where he laughs it off.
He laughs it off. But then afterwards, when she's like telling him, you can't ever come back here. And he's like, no, I'll come back here if I feel like it. And she's like, no, I will throw you out of here. And he says, no, you won't. And he grabs her by the arms and throws her down really hard.
Yeah. And then later so he like, fucking hits her.
Yeah, later he does. But then like there's a later scene where she finally goes inside his house. And this is an amazing scene.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to. Okay. Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, you can go on.
She goes over there and, like, realizes he's a hoarder.
Right, and realizes he's, like, there's pictures of his ex-wife with the face scratched
with her
out.
Face scratched out. Yeah.
And they do, it's a great moment because then he's talking about how ashamed he is. Also, right. throughout this, he keeps giving her stuff.
Yes.
Which, again, is one of those signs where you know, like, oh, he's trying to exert power over her by giving mm-hmm. her stuff. But yeah. It's even though we can see it, and there's a part near the beginning because she sleeps with his friend. That's what sparks it. Where like when they're drunk, he tries to kiss her, and Jason Sudeikis freaks the fuck out on him. And it's
right.
the first warning sign where yeah. they do it. Where it's like, oh, he's clearly unhinged.
Yeah, he's possessive of her in some way.
Yeah.
And we're not quite clear on what, I mean, we assume at first, like, oh, he's like romantically interested in her, but that's not it. Yeah. Like, it's like,
and we all can see this, and it's like watching a friend in a relationship that's bad because you can see it. But then she goes to his house and like, he's acts like, oh, I'm such a fuck up. I'm so sorry. And she
and he's like real pathetic
him.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because she's a fuck up. And so again, she has empathy. Mm-hmm. She has the thing he doesn't. Oh, man.
Right, because she actually tells him, she's like, look, I've done so many stupid ass things and fucked up so terribly when I've been drunk. I can't not, you know, forgive you for this one. You know, it's like, it's all right.
The difference
he doesn't change. Like the very next scene.
And he in fact becomes more,
he becomes emboldened.
Yeah.
Cause he knows he can get away with it now.
Right. And since she's working for him, he starts ordering her around. The part where Dan Stevens shows up at the bar before the firework, he's like talking to her, like, can you get us drinks? And like, is just talking to Dan Stevens. Like, well, the men are talking, you know,
kind of. He doesn't even ask. He just points at the bar.
Right. Basically the fireworks scene is him talking about what's the most fucked up thing he could do in this bar. Yeah.
What's the most irresponsible thing I can do in the bar right now?
Yeah. And he names all these things, and he finally takes out this firework and gives a monologue about where he got the firework. Mm-hmm. Then he lights it, and it causes a huge fucking commotion in the bar. And he's like, I just did the most irresponsible thing. And she's still not going to leave with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because she can't.
Yeah.
And she doesn't. And of course, Dan Stevens doesn't understand why. And it's just, it's such a good scene.
Yeah. It's real tense.
Yeah, and they do such a good job again of like, Sudeikis is, he's pathetic. We see that he's pathetic. You see that he's sniveling, and then he wants the attention of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And like the firework is such the perfect amount of what the fuck, dude, to do
but
in that situation.
He is pathetic. But when he does the thing, like when he set, for example, when he's setting up the firework, or in the scene when he's calling out Tim Blake Nelson,
right?
Like the way he plays the character, like when he's setting up the firework, he's talking in a perfectly even voice, but he's like moving furniture, and it's getting increasingly more violent. Like he starts basically throwing it against the wall.
Yeah, he never really raises his voice.
Yeah, he's freaking out. Or like he's this is a very realistic display to me. Like I've seen people behave like this before.
Yes.
When someone truly frightens you with their behavior.
Right. When they're just doing this like calm, like, okay, fine, we'll just do this instead. You know, like that really like about to explode. And like he does it with the Tim Blake Nelson where it's like, mm-hmm. Hey man, everything's cool, while he's antagonizing him.
Yeah.
So like he's making Tim Blake Nelson freak out, and he's acting like he's the cool as a cucumber. There's nothing wrong with him. But again, he's like still like aggressive about it. Like tell he's fucking tense.
And then at the end of that scene, when like Tim Blake Nelson's finally like, you know what, I'm just gonna leave. You're an asshole. And then he stops and turns around and tries to say something else to him, and Sudeikis is like, no, you were leaving, you were on your way out. And so he turns around and then turns around again and tries to say the same thing again, and then Sudeikis fucking screams at him. He's like, get the fuck out of here before I call the cops, you fucking junkie. And it's like this explosion out of nowhere from like before. He's like, no, I'm chill, I'm cool as a cucumber.
Yeah.
Again, it was like, it's those are the situations that like are recognizable to a lot of people, I think, where it's like, like I said, where someone is like truly being frightening with the way that they're behaving. It's like, holy shit, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
Yeah, I'm not advocating for this to happen necessarily, but this has made me realize he would be great in
what?
A remake of The Shining.
Like, yes,
he would be a great Jack Torrance.
Yeah.
It's a different performance than Nicholson, but it gets the same thing across. It would make you very afraid.
Yeah.
You would sense the danger from him, but it would be just a more of a ramping a tone. I just can see that really clearly. That's a really good, if for some crazy reason you haven't watched Colossal, kind of imagine a performance like that. Something that's just like really sinister.
Well, and it has the same escalation too.
And, yeah,
kind of.
Yeah.
Where it's like it finally just degenerates into like really like it like violence.
Yeah. It's a hell of a performance from Jason Sudeikis.
I know, right?
It's surprising.
I was like, where did this come from?
Yeah, and where did it go?
Like, I like him as like a comedic actor, and then like in this movie it's like, this is not what I was expecting from him.
And that's what made him the perfect choice for this, is because again, if you don't know anything about it, you just don't assume that's gonna be the case. You know, maybe he's gonna be kind of a fuck up, or he's gonna do something bad, but you don't think it's gonna get so dark that he has to be killed. And it gets that dark.
It sure does.
It's also, they make him funny. They still make him, like the scene where he's telling the astronaut story in the beginning. Like, Jason Sudeikis is funny in that scene, so they don't get rid of that. They make him, again, they make it so that you kind of like him before you realize
he's likable
he
at first.
Is. Yeah.
He's the quote-unquote nice guy.
Right, and they let him be... Exactly. They let him be genuinely likable, so you don't sense necessarily that he's the quote-unquote nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems like he's going to be the romantic interest when that is not the case.
No, distinctly not. Man.
Oh, man. And then once it gets worse is that in the Tim Blake Nelson scene, he's giving her crap for not drinking and like keeps putting her in that loophole of like, you think you're fucking better. And he's like, all right, this is what's going to happen. You're going to drink this beer or I'm going to go back on that playground.
Yep.
And that's the first thing that, because she pours that beer out.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they do a good job with that. Where it's like, she never, bends to his will. She's just sort of hostage. So she's like,
yeah. Like, she doesn't leave the bar after he sets the firework off, but she also, she starts to leave and then comes back.
And then later when he shows up at her house.
Fuck.
It's the same thing. She comes home and he's there already.
He's just sitting there in the dark.
In the house that he is now furnished with a copy of her key.
Yep.
And he's like, I think you might want to call Dan Stevens at some point. And so I'm here to make sure you don't make that mistake. Like, and it's just, it's so
chilling. They have a great fight in that house.
Yeah. And that's when I was like, he's a coward.
Because
once it comes down, because basically what happens is she sits there and listens to him, and then she calls Dan Stevens.
Right.
Like
she calls Dan Stevens, like making unbroken eye contact with Sudeikis.
Yeah. And it's just like, fuck you. So he starts to try to run out of the house to go to this playground, and she just like wails on him. And it's they show him, you know, is able to physically assert himself against her in other scenes, but in this scene she's just so angry that even like that he's like, ah, and like is running from
her. It's when she has the upper hand.
Yeah.
Like, because she starts off their confrontation by hitting him with a chair.
Right. And she's not fucking around.
And she freaks out at first because she hits him with the chair and he goes down and he kind of like, the veneer goes away where he's like, is just like going to be violent now. And she's like, and then when it's clear that he's like going to attack her, she like throws a bookcase on him, she hits him with something, like she has weapons in this scene, so he's like, he runs upstairs and dives out the window.
Yeah, because she's like that. I think that's the turn where she's prepared to fucking kill him.
Yes,
because again, the whole thing that's like, you have to remember is that it's literally a city of people, the lives of these people that
he's stomping and they do on.
It's such a good connection, because not just the playground thing, but the idea that to him, those people are clearly abstract, to her, they're real people. So he can murder scores of people without thinking of it. And throughout the movie, they show people in Korea like mourning the deaths. They make sure they show her be like horrified when she first sees the footage. They do a really good job at that, where it's like,
I thought they could have done a little bit of a better job, because it still felt kind of abstract to me, but I understand that there were like budgetary limitations to this film.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And I liked how they got around it a little bit, because there's some of the CGI sequences when they were there looked good, I thought.
Yeah, they're not bad. They're totally fine.
Yeah. And I think the reason why is because they found a way around it, which is that the third playground fight, that's when he punches her in the face.
Yeah.
And basically she's down for the count. And when he does that, you hear all the people watching the TVs go silent because the hero is down and the robot.
Yeah.
And then they just show a shot of her and a shot of his boots stomping in the sand. And you can hear the screaming of the people that he's killing.
Yeah. Where it's unclear if it's coming from the TVs of the neighbors or not, but yeah, right. you're hearing the sounds of the robot crush swaths of buildings and people beneath its feet as Sudeikis is stomping across the cedar chips.
Right, and that's their way of like getting around it a little bit, but it's effective because you're showing Anne Hathaway's face.
Right, because we're seeing her face as she's just like she's weeping over this. Yeah. That she's horrified over this. Over this.
And I think it's around that we get the reveal of what happened, because when they were kids, they basically both her, she had a diorama that blew into this area of the playground. Of Soul, yeah. And Jason Sudeikis, the reveal is like they keep showing that they're like, we're kind of childhood friends. And then the reveal is Sudeikis helped her find the diorama before stepping on it.
Right. Yeah. They break it up in a way that's nice because it's teased out with the reveal of the film where like her, it gets caught by the wind and blows over a fence and he climbs over to go get it. And she follows after him a little bit and sees that he's found the diorama and she's like, oh, good, he found it. And then he puts it on the ground and stomps on it like a
right,
fucker.
Like a shitty little kid. And then they get hit by lightning and you see they both have the toys, the respective toys of what they became. And she gets hit on the head where she always has
where
her nervous scratch.
Yeah.
So again, it's like, oh, that's enough. It's enough. It's not really the point. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not important how the magic works, and watching the film, like I didn't like seeing that scene was like, okay.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. In a worse film that might've bothered me. And we've talked about this in the past where it's like, you know, but why they're rushing through it so we can have this other great fucking film that's worth hand waving that, you know?
Right. It's, you know, yeah. Everything has to be in service to the story. So, if the story is about the conflict between these people, you can hand wave the magic. Like, I don't care.
Yeah. You can also excuse like, again, like, oh, technically she could have called the cops on him and maybe she could have figured it out. But it's that thing of like, there's so many lives at stake that you understand that it's like, she can't really take the risk. And also you understand her character enough to know, like, again, she does everything you kind of want her to do. At no point was I frustrated with her decisions.
Yeah.
It's just, again, it's all serving like a really fun allegory. I don't know why I used the word fun just then, but it kind of is because it's so original.
Yeah.
And it's saying, again, it's meaningful without necessarily like weighing in on.
No. And it never beats you over their head or gets like preachy or anything. It's just like, hey, here's what this is.
Well, for example, like the way it treats her drinking at the end where she's just like, ugh.
Yeah.
Because it's not necessarily that she's like, I will not drink again. It's just her like, ugh, this is a problem. And it's not necessarily that she, like, it could go either way and it doesn't, you know, like, her drinking was more of a symptom of something in this case. And they handle it really well, again, where it's not trying to say one specific thing or scream at you, at, like, this is the answer. It's complex. Dan Stevens, again, like, at the end, her last conversation with him is just sort of like, look, you told me that you don't want to deal with me if I'm not in control. Well, I'm really not in control right now.
Yeah.
So I'll talk to you later. And hangs up. And that's when she's in Korea and she's about to fight on her side, and the way they do that is great, is because she has the giant robot in front of her, and so she's able to see, like, she crouches on the ground and grabs him and then sees that the giant robot has been grabbed, so she knows that she has him, and then like lifts him up and she throws him, which I mean I thought she was going to crush him, but like throwing, that could have gone wrong if that robot didn't disintegrate.
Right, if the robot didn't dematerialize, although I guess she's throwing him over the ocean at that point.
Yeah. I also liked, this wasn't appropriate, but like they show every time they're at the playground that they see kids going to school. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering like, oh God, is she going to step on those kids? luckily she didn't.
Maybe it wasn't a school day.
Yeah, that's true. And of course, when she grabs Sudeikis, he's like sniveling. And I didn't need this, but I know why they did it, which is that he's like begging for his life, and then he becomes a dick at the last minute. And then,
right, and it's the bad guy grabbing for his gun so that the heroes can shoot him. That's
And I kind of didn't need that because the whole point of this is that like he's relied on that pity, on being pathetic for so long.
It would have. I get it though. Like it would have been hard to have her kill him while he's like crying and begging for his life. And that's kind of where I could have used a little more of of actually seeing the destruction, because it still felt kind of abstract. And in that moment, I still kind of felt like, well, don't kill him. Like he's
right.
Real. And then like when he shouts at his, when he's like, put me down, you fucking bitch. You're like, oh, right. Like,
yeah,
I remember.
I'm not comparing this in terms of quality.
Mm-hmm.
I would just want to make that very clear. But it's like Jon Snow killing Khaleesi, where it's the idea of like, no, you, I have to put you down. Like you're dangerous. You've killed a lot of people. And
right.
By showing, if they had shown, obviously, I mean, personally, I don't think it was as earned in Game of Thrones. But
no, not at all. But at least they showed it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this, if they had shown more of the damage, that would have gotten it across more. But yeah, it was probably budget. Maybe pacing.
I'm sure
I don't know.
It was budgetary for sure.
Yeah. Because that's sort of what it is. Clear. It's like it doesn't matter. At this point, you've done. You've committed genocide, and like. I don't know how to stop this power. Like, you need to be stopped because you can't stop yourself.
Right.
It's basically him not respecting what sobered her up, which, the responsibility of what the power they have.
Yeah. And she's like, she's sad about it. I mean, she's like,
she doesn't want to do it
when she walks into the bar.
Yeah, exactly. They did. That was great too, that they didn't make, again, they didn't make it. They let the characters be very complex, and they trusted the actors to do those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they performed it really well.
Yeah, without ever having to, like, with the exception of the one part where Anne Hathaway just tells us what Sudeikis is.
But she tells it to him.
Right, she tells it to him, and in a way, I mean, she's telling us, but they do it in a way that it's like, all right, like that's acceptable for the movie.
Yeah.
But everything else, they just let the performances tell it. Like, they didn't have, nobody ever literally stated, this is who I am, and this is what I want, and this is how I'm feeling about this. It was just like, no, it came out in the performances.
Right. So Sudeikis never says he's jealous of Anne Hathaway's relationship with his dummy little friend, who, by the way, I liked the way the friend worked in this, because he sleeps with Anne Hathaway. Yeah, he's a fucking coward. He just sort of goes along with Sudeikis for a while, but he also doesn't want it to happen. But then he also, like, he never stands up. And it's, again, it's the schoolyard bully thing. It's,
right. And because he's also clearly afraid of Sudeikis, because he shows up with all that stuff. It's like, no, Oscar says he's really, really sorry, and he sent me over here with all this furniture. So it's still like,
right.
Oh, you're being terrorized by this guy too, you little wimp.
Right. I don't want to make it an allegory for the internet, but a lot of this is that it's a guy who's like kind of angry at where he is, getting a certain amount of power that he can inflict on people that's across the country, that's across the world, that he doesn't feel like are real people. Like, there's a lot of like, it's that idea of like, suddenly he gets all this power and no emotional accountability, and he devolves into a fucking child bully immediately.
Mm-hmm. Immediately, yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't mean, like, they set him up as already being fucked up, so it's not like a normal person suddenly becoming this. It's just showing what happens when you give a certain person this kind of power.
And no accountability.
And no accountability.
And I mean, and sometimes accountability doesn't even matter.
No, yeah, yeah. Like, well, yeah, there is accountability in here. Like, It's just he knows he can get away with it.
Yes, exactly. He knows he can get away with
it. He knows no one's going to believe it. And they set that up really nicely at first.
In the diner scene.
Yeah, because before you know even he's a bad guy, he points it out where he's like talking loudly about what they are. And she's like, don't, someone's going to hear. And he's like, what if they hear? No one's going to know what the hell we're talking about. We're the monsters. It's just like...
And then there's the table of old ladies are looking at him and he looks over and he says, hi. I'm the robot. She's the monster.
Yeah.
Like, just so like, yeah, what are they going to do?
Yeah. And at that point, he's still funny and charming because he's right. And you don't realize how dark it's going to get.
Right.
Oh.
We don't realize quite why he thinks this is so funny and is being so cavalier about it.
Right. And they do such
like,
a good.
I get to do this and nobody can stop me.
Right. And there's little things where when she first goes to apologize, he's like, oh, I want to join. Should I join? And she's like, no, this is something I want to do. And that's it's also a good exchange where because she's like, I'm going to go to the playground and apologize. And he's like, okay. And she's like, you can go home. Like, I don't need you to come. And he's like, no, I want to come. I'm not going to sleep. And then when he gets there, then she's like, okay, he wants to go up there on the playground with her. And she's like, no, just me. And he's like, why did you invite me? And he's like, no, yeah, you invited yourself,
you invited
motherfucker.
Yourself, yeah.
But and they do it so subtly.
When he gets the message for it too is another good subtle thing that I'm just now realizing is he goes in to the restaurant to get the owner to write down the phrase in Korean that she wants, you know, to say, I'm sorry, it was a mistake, it won't happen again. And he comes out to the car and hands her the note, and he's like, there you go. And she's like, well, did he think it was her? He's like, no, he's a friend of mine. I've been coming here for years. He even gave us free food. And she looks past him, and the guy is hugging his family, looking at the news, and they're clearly, like, very upset and very distraught. And Sudeikis does not care.
No, exactly.
And he just said they're friends. And he's so jolly about, they even gave us free food. Like, he's not...
They set it up so well.
Yeah.
Because a lot of this is like romantic comedy character tropes.
Yes.
Is that if he was just like a badly written romantic comedy interest, mm-hmm. we wouldn't notice a lot. Because again, when the idea is she goes to her parents' old house, I think, or it's like her uncle's old house or
it's
something.
It's her parents.
And there's no furniture. So the first night she sleeps on the floor. Second night she goes out and gets an air mattress. And I love it because I could relate to like the fuck upness
yeah.
of how like she's like, ugh. And then she gets drunk and then goes home and like doesn't blow up the air mattress right away and just falls asleep. And then Sudeikis shows up with like a TV and he's like, hey, I got you a TV. And she's like, oh, thanks so much. This is unexpected. And he's like, oh, you don't remember our conversation last night. And he starts it's almost like gaslighting because he's just like, no, you were really drunk. And you said you wanted a TV and also you needed a job, so I offered
right.
you a job. And ultimately, yeah, in retrospect, it's like she might not have said
right.
any
in retrospect,
of that.
We have no idea whether that conversation yeah. took place.
But at first, it seems very friendly. And he's
yeah.
like, oh, I got you a TV. I'm such a... And you genuinely are like, what a nice guy. I get it. He's like had a crush on her since they were kids. That's what they're setting up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just trying to be around her. And then he notices the air mattress and then later shows up with a futon.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they do it in a way where she's sort of brushing off Dan Stevens. So it still feels like a little romantic comedy where it's like, oh, she's moving on.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, later when he apologizes and his friend brings over a fucking truck full of furniture.
Yeah.
And that's when you realize like, oh, this is one more method of control.
Yes.
And they do such a good way of introducing all the pieces
mm-hmm.
in an order that it all clicks together. Like it clicks that what he's a dark character and that he's going to be abusive, but then like all the little pieces start clicking as you go where you realize like the extent of it.
Yeah. Like I want to watch this movie again now and look for that.
Cause yeah,
this was the first time seeing it for me. So
yeah. As the second time, when did you realize he was going to be as bad as he's going to be?
It would have been during the playground scene. It was like a surprise. I was like, what is, and then in the scene afterwards when they're at the bar and he dresses down Tim Blake Nelson, it was really like, what is wrong with him?
Oh yeah.
Like,
what a fucking, oh man, what a villain.
Yeah. He's such a good villain.
This movie has like, one of the like one of the best recent villain performances in it.
Yeah.
And
sure.
It's not really well known. So like Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, watch this movie. This is a good film.
Yeah, it's I can't wait to see what this guy does. I think he did I believe he did a VHS segment.
Oh, I don't know. I know he did a movie called Extraterrestrial. And I think he's done two other films. I need to look. He's a Spanish filmmaker, I want to say.
Yeah, this is a Spanish Canadian production, is what it was credited as.
Mm-hmm.
His name, oh no, I don't, I'm gonna fuck this name up. His first name is Nacho, or at least it's spelled Nacho.
Mm-hmm.
Vigaliondo.
Yep.
I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, everybody.
Yeah.
He did the segment Parallel Monsters for VHS Viral, which, if you remember, is one of the good ones of Viral.
Yeah, that was the most clever one.
Yeah. I mean, it had dick monsters from what
it
I remember.
It did have dick monsters in it.
But he's written something, but he doesn't have, he's like done a couple like shorts and stuff since now. He did one of the Into the Darks. Yeah, which I'll have to watch.
God, I gotta get on.
And he wrote Paradise Hills, which is the Mila Jovovich, Emma Roberts film that I assumed was going to be bad and now have to go see.
Yeah. I want to watch more of this guy's work.
Yeah. Because this is a hell of a
good thing. Yeah, yeah. This is a hell of a swing, and man, does it connect.
Yeah, it does. Good God. Everybody check out this movie.
Yeah, this is an excellent film. If you haven't watched it, I feel bad that you've listened to the entire show.
Mm-hmm. We warned them. We warned them for those fuckers.
We did warn you. I was very emphatic about what you should do.
Yeah. All right, that's my thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a sode for sure.
All right. Thanks for... Hey, guys, thanks for listening.
Oh, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, Dave, we really appreciate it.
Dave, what do we got going on?
Guys, we got a Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We have exclusive podcasts like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman and Fox Mulder is a Maniac. Mm. There's other tiers there. There's a tier where you can watch movies with us every Friday night. Mm-hmm. There'll be some new tiers slowly rolling out over time. No specifics yet. Check it all out. You'll love it.
Yeah, and we also got a store, tpublic.com/store/gamefullyunemployed, where you can check out some merch, some new t-shirt designs we got coming in, and other cool stuff. For cool people. So check that out. If you're a fan of our shows, there's stuff in there, including logos and like jokes and references that we've made that you can wear emblazoned on your chest.
I bought a Stabbed by the Bell shirt, which was made by Doc Garby, one of our listeners.
Stabbed by the Bell.
I don't know when I'm going to wear that out, but I have it.
Yeah, it's a real power move, wearing a t-shirt with your own face on it.
Yeah, I should wear it to job interviews. If I ever have another one of those again.
Bit of subtle intimidation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
My
goal is to never do another job interview.
Same here, but if I do, I'm going to go to the job interview and wear the top hat and the mask that I'm wearing on the shirt.
Yeah. Well, you should definitely wear the top hat.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you want the job.
I like that any single one of those items would be enough.
But I do love the top hat would be the one that you could get away with the most, because you could be like, what? I thought I was supposed to dress nice. And they'd be like, I mean, yeah, you are, but like no one wears a top hat.
Nobody wears a top hat.
Yeah. And you could just feign ignorance. You'd be like, no one wears a top hat. Jesus, what are your standards?
Well, harumph, sir.
Yeah.